Hello once again, everybody. I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett, and welcome to Across the Sky. It's our national Lee Enterprises weather podcast. Lee Enterprises has print and digital news operations in 77 locations across the country, including my home base in Richmond, Virginia. I'm here with my meteorology co-host from Across the Sky, Joe Martucci in Atlantic City, Matt Hollander, Chicago, and Kirsten Lang in Tulsa. So we'll go around the horn first, see how everybody is doing. Matt, let's start with you in Chicago this week. How are things there?
Well, you know, in the spirit of Groundhog Day, I am thoroughly over winter. I mean, really, since that Christmas storm, the big blizzard, the big cold, the big snow, since then, I mean, it has been one system after another. I mean, we get a couple of dry days, maybe a couple of dry days, and then another system comes through. And how much snow is there going to be this time? And then it starts as rain and changes over to snow. And then the next low comes through and it takes a slightly different path. And oh, this one's going to be slower and dump more snow. And then we warm up and then we cool down. And so many cloudy days. I'm over winter. I'm done. It's time for spring. It's time for some warmer temperatures. Time for some sunshine. I can't believe just how many cloudy days. Even when it's dry, it has been tough to have some sunshine to really lift your spirits. So it is the January glooms for sure across the Midwest.
Yeah, you know, we haven't had any snow here in Virginia. Ironically, I know there's been some snow in Oklahoma more recently. Let's go to Tulsa. I know, Kirsten, you didn't have so much snow in Tulsa, but there was some snow around Oklahoma, right?
No, there was. Yeah, it was one of those forecasts where the next day you kind of, you know, put your head down a little bit when you go into the grocery store because we were under a winter weather or a winter storm warning. You know, we were looking at possibly 4 or 5 inches of snowfall with this event that happened. And unfortunately we just, those temperatures just wouldn't go down. And so when you looked at the radar, and it was just in Tulsa. So when you looked at the radar, they called it the donut hole. Tulsa was kind of the donut hole of this whole thing because we had snow everywhere, but just our temperatures in the Tulsa area, just like Tulsa County specifically, just would not get cold enough. And everything was there. I mean, it was there. It would have happened. We just couldn't get cold enough. So like I said, the next day, everyone sitting here asking me, well, what happened? What happened? I'm like, well, I mean, if temperatures don't get cold enough, then you're not going to get any snow. So it was just a nice cold rain for like, you know, 24 hours.
Man, that's tough. Those are tough things to forecast, especially in areas that aren't accustomed to getting snow. With that, let's go to Jersey and Joe Martucci in Atlantic City. Joe, you and I are kind of in the same boat here on the East Coast, just this lack of snow. I know you've had a tiny bit here or there in Jersey, but how are things there in South Jersey right now?
You'd have a better chance of hitting the Powerball than getting snow down here.
Oh.
And I didn't get that $1.6 billion, so I'm back here with everybody. Yeah, snow's been hard to come by. As Sean, you know, you and I, we do our snow search every week. We're still searching for snow somewhere out there in the abyss. Looks like things might change around Groundhog Day, so good timing for this. In other news, now this podcast is going to get released on Monday, but it could be a big weekend for us here. Eagles in the NFC Championship game on Sunday. Everyone is going crazy here in South Jersey. We're going to talk to our guest about where he lies on that, being in Pennsylvania. But we have the Eagles going on, so maybe they'll still be playing when everyone listens to this podcast. In other news, my hockey team is 4-0. We just won yesterday in a shootout, 3-2.
Okay, very good. Very good. Well, we've talked a lot about Groundhog Day, which is a good segue into our guest this week, an old friend of mine who went to Penn State with me back in the day in the late 80s and early 90s. Our guest is Joe Murgo, longtime meteorologist at WTAJ, the CBS station in Altoona, Pennsylvania. He's been covering the festivities there at Gobbler's Knob and Punxsutawney with Phil every Groundhog Day for more than 20 years. Joe, welcome to the podcast, bud.
Thank you. And you just made me feel old by that introduction, but, you know, the years go by.
They do. They do go by in a hurry. With that, you know, the movie Groundhog Day was released 30 years ago this week. And I think ever since then, Punxsutawney has now really become a household name. Weather Channel is there every year as well. But you have been in the thick of that thing every year for more than 20 years. So I want to start with a couple of basic things. What are one or two things that are very obviously different than how it's portrayed in the movie?
Well, first of all, the movie was not filmed in Punxsutawney. It is a town that is in the Midwest. It has nothing really to do. It doesn't look like it at all. In fact, when people get there the first time, they're like, "Ooh, I'm in town. There's a little tiny town square, a little festival. Where's Phil?" And then they're like, "Oh yeah, you have to go a couple of miles up into the woods." And that's where it is. It's Gobbler's Knob is up on a hilltop that is a fair distance from downtown Punxsutawney. So there's no rolling out of your bed and getting there. The party is big. It is no longer all night long. In fact, a couple of years after 9/11, they don't let people up now until 3 a.m. Before, they used to be there all night long. You used to be able to park up there, and very few people are up there during the overnight time period. So it's just a much different scenario.
Joe, I was going to ask too, you mentioned once in an interview that covering Groundhog Day is kind of like the Super Bowl week of weather. So can you tell us a little bit about your preparation for that day, specifically what you do?
Well, we're in the countdown. So we do a lot of planning ahead of time, because I cover not just my local TV stations. I've done as many as 27 stations in a single morning there. So our preparation has gotten easier through time, just because I live the movie. Everything is kind of the same routine. The only thing that may change is, you know, where I'm going to stay. For the longest period of time, a little off the record, they let me put an RV up there and I would spend the night on Gobbler's Knob. I'd be the only person there, but it was great because I would be able to sleep in. But we plan out what we're going to do. We do a half an hour special. We put our grid out there for people for their live shots. And that stuff for me is my preparation. But the town itself, they just go to like preparation mode of all of a sudden this tiny little burg in central Western Pennsylvania just grows. How are they going to deal with the traffic? They close the schools down for Punxsutawney. They use the school buses to actually transport people up there from downtown. There are not many places to sleep in Gobbler's Knob. There are a few Airbnbs. There's only two hotels in the area. And for a while it was down to one. Yet otherwise you're staying a good half an hour away. They take an auditorium in downtown and get ready people just bring sleeping bags and just crash on the floor of this gymnasium. And they, you know, it costs like $5 for a crash space. So it's very interesting. And, you know, and a lot of the merchants just have to get ready for, you know, extra serving people, extra food and souvenirs. I mean, without Groundhog Day, Punxsutawney really, I mean, that's where a lot of their tourism money comes from.
And Joe, could you go into the history a little bit about Groundhog Day? How did it wind up? I mean, how do we get a groundhog predicting the weather first? And second, why Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, of all places? How did it become the center of, are we going to get 6 more weeks of winter or not? So why Punxsutawney and why a groundhog predicting the weather?
Well, it all started off with Candlemas Day and in Europe. And the old saying, I'm trying to think, and if Candlemas Day was dry, there would be 2 winters that year. So and Candlemas Day is a religious holiday that came from, how should I say it? Oh, here we go. If Candlemas Day be fair and bright, come winter, have another fight. If Candlemas Day brings clouds and rain, go winter and not come again. So it was a Christian holiday. And even though it was a Christian holiday, most holidays, they are based around the position of the sun. I mean, a lot of holidays are. Halloween and, you know, and also you know, Candlemas Day, and which is now Groundhog Day, because we're halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. And so that's when people started to get restless and getting ready to come out of a winter in Europe. It started in Europe. And in Europe, they took that Candlemas Day saying, and they're like, they somehow translated it over to a hedgehog. And they would use a hedgehog and say if the hedgehog came up and saw a shadow, there'd be another winter. And that's where it started there at first. And then when the Germans migrated to Pennsylvania, and there's a big German population right around Punxsutawney, they said, okay, let's keep on doing this. There are no hedgehogs. They're like, oh, groundhog is pretty close. And they started in the late 1800s. And just there was a local newspaper that put out that forecast, and it just grew from there, and it became such a tradition. And they, year after year after year, they kept on doing that. And then they said, and actually the first prediction was, his name was Weather Wags, but it became Punxsutawney Phil. And since then, they've just been doing it. And when the movie came out, there really weren't many people who came up back before 1993. You know, there were some people who would make the trek. But when that movie came out and became a hit, that's when thousands upon thousands of people would make that trek.
When we talk about Groundhog Day, take us back to your first Groundhog Day that you covered. What was it like? What was the buildup like for you going into it? And, you know, just how did it turn out for you?
Well, my first Groundhog Day was 2-2-0-2. So it was a big to-do because of the date, February 2nd of 2002. So that year, there was about 30,000 people. And for me to go for the first time around, I'm like, wow, it was a little bit. I've always wanted to see it. And it was a learning experience where I was in the back of the crowd covering it. And and it was just such a hit. And the station really, they always sent someone, but we did a lot more that year. And then after that, it just grew. And then starting the next year, I had my own little spot right in front of Phil. If you're looking at the stage just left of there, and I've been there since 2003. And what went from awe-inspiring, nothing really shocks me now of what I'll see up there. And I was there before the first couple of years. It's actually 2002. It was still a free-for-all party. Now it's a lot more organized. I mean, no, they're not supposed to be alcohol, and, you know, it is just a regular concert. It's like a warm-up concert before Phil. They play music, there's dancing, there's games, everything you would expect to keep a crowd warm starting at 3 a.m. That'll go all the way till the time they bring Phil out just after 7.
All right, Joe, that's a really good introduction. We want to take a quick break. We're going to do our astronomy report, then come back. Then I want to go back with you into a little deeper and find a couple of really good nuggets and really good stories from things that you've seen over these past 20 years covering Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney Phil there in Pennsylvania. So stay with us. We'll be right back with more on the Across the Sky podcast.
Looking beyond the atmosphere, here's Tony Rice with your astronomy outlook.
Comet C2022-E3-ZTF reaches its closest point to Earth on Wednesday evening into the morning hours of Thursday. And that means it's going to be at its brightest. But you're still going to need dark skies and at least a decent set of binoculars to see this icy visitor. To see it for yourself, look to the north between the Big and Little Dippers. Follow the two stars on the outer edge of the bowl of the Little Dipper upwards. The comet will follow that line as it heads higher above the horizon in the next couple of days. The comet's also a bit easier to see right now because it's above the horizon all night. Elsewhere in the sky, something kind of cool is happening this week. The night of Monday, January 30th, Mars and the Moon will appear very close in the sky for everybody. But for observers south of a line that runs from central California across to southern Georgia, you'll see an occultation. The moon will pass in front of Mars, hiding it for anywhere from 30 minutes to about an hour. For example, for observers in Los Angeles, Mars will disappear behind the moon at 8:35 p.m. Pacific and reappear a little less than an hour later. That show begins at 11:15 p.m. local in Houston and 12:41 a.m. Eastern in Orlando. The moon and Earth are moving pretty fast, so these times are going to vary greatly across the U.S. Visit lunar-occultations.com for a list of these cities and times. Be sure to convert from the UTC time zone listed there to your local time zone. That's your Astronomy Outlook. Follow me at RTP Hokey for more spacey stuff like this.
And welcome back to the Across the Sky podcast. I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett with my meteorology colleagues from Across the Sky and our guest this week, Joe Murgo, longtime broadcast meteorologist at WTAJ, the CBS station in Altoona, talking about Groundhog Day, what it's really like going up to Gobbler's Knob, how it has changed there over the years, as he's been covering the festivities there every year for more than 20 years. Joe, you were saying before the break, in the early days, it was a big free-for-all and a party. Then it kind of pared back a little bit. But then when COVID hit, obviously that had to change things dramatically. Talk through that a little bit.
When COVID hit, they said that they weren't going to allow anyone up there. They were just going to do it virtual online. And, you know, with the pandemic hitting, I, at that point, I'm like, well, I'm not going to go to Groundhog Day. I had to get surgery on my hip to repair. And, I wasn't replacing. So it meant I was going to be non-weight bearing for 8 weeks. And so I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to miss. I'm going to keep my streak going. I'll get the surgery in January. I'll be fine. But then they gave me an invitation and they said, do you still want to come? And so I'm like, sure. And so I couldn't spend the night there. So I went up there, crutches, in a snowstorm, and we went live. And it will be an experience I'll never forget, because they had cardboard cutouts of people who, you know, wanted to support Groundhog Day on the side. It was me sitting on a stool, you know, with crutches in the middle of a snowstorm. It was pretty snowy that year. And that was it. And then when it was time for Phil to come out, they just yelled out, Murgo, you ready? And I'm like, yep. And we just went with it and did it. And that was a very interesting year. And they, you know, after that, were hoping it would come back. And it has. Last year's crowd was really good. So it did make a rebound from COVID.
So I have, you know, two questions, and you may not know one of them, and that's okay. But the first is, do you know the average size of the audience there? The like recent sizes. I know we talked about how it's fluctuated. And then the second is, you know, can you give us maybe one of those good stories with kind of one of those large crowds, just something that sticks out in your mind that was, you know, just a wild story from one year?
The crowd has been fluctuating some over the years, but it really depends if it's a weekend or not. If it's a Friday going into Saturday or a Saturday going into Sunday, you're talking 30,000 plus people, and it's still just as much as it's been. If you're during the week, it's usually on a really good warm weather day, you can get up to about 25. Otherwise, it's between 10 and 20. And a lot of it really depends on the weather, where, you know, can people travel there? Is there going to be a snowstorm, a rainstorm, and those things? And that's when maybe some of the people within driving distance really come and do their bucket list thing. So that's where it varies a good bit. And wild stories. Well, there, I have several. I mean, 2003 was an interesting one. Governor Ed Rendell from the state of Pennsylvania. Yes, Philadelphia boys probably know about him. He came, and that year, I'll just say, and they always tell me ahead of time, they're like, yeah, be careful, because I get the first interview with Phil afterwards. And that year, they're like, I don't even know if you're going to get an interview, because Phil was really ornery. I'll just put it at that. There's a lot of things that goes on behind the scenes, but, you know, and they warned the governor, when you come on the stage, whatever you do, don't pet the groundhog. And that's the rule of thumb on a good year. So Ed Rendell comes up. What's the first thing he does is he's reaching out, and I'm like right there. And the handler that year, Bill Cooper, he did a phenomenal job because I think it was millimeters from getting his finger. I mean, and those teeth are sharp. When you're seeing them wear the gloves, the black gloves, underneath is fencing gloves because they can really chop through you. Now, some of the more recent handlers risk it. And, you know, when you're up close to them, you see marks all over their hands because groundhogs can be a little bit on the nasty side. Some years Phil is really friendly and some years he's not. I think it was that year or the year afterwards also there. And this is, well, it must have been 2002, actually, that this, or 2003. It was 2003. They came. There was a lot, there was this guy Glennie who started doing a lot of internet stuff back then when it was still going on, and a lot of wild things, and he brought a woman in a fur bikini, and it was really cold, and he knew me, and he knew I was one of the main people covering, and he told the woman, whatever you do, don't get away from him. And there was one time that I'm doing my live report with Harrisburg at that point in time, and she jumped behind and did a dance, and the anchor is just like, oh my. And that really, like, they're like, oh, the party's still going on up at Groundhog Day. And, you know, there's been, I mean, I could think back to just so many different things. It's just different. There's always something new that is going on there. There was one time MTV way long ago, Viva La Bam was there. And there was talk that he was going to storm the stage and try to do a video stunt, and just watching the logistics, cause I'm right up there of it. It was really interesting too. And yeah, so there's still some very good stories out there. I mean, one time Phil almost got away and slipped through his hands. And, you know, I told you how sharp his teeth was, and Phil's face went right to another part of the man's anatomy that you were like, oof, that could have been bad. Or the one time, you know, and I'm always aware because, you know, they're animals, they go whenever. And there was like a fire hose coming out of Phil when they held him up and over the stage and just... So there's little things being there close that you can really see some of the fun things.
Joe, let's get into the actual, you know, six more weeks of winter or not six more weeks of winter. What can you tell us, you know, about the accuracy of this? What does the official organization say the accuracy is of the groundhog? And what do you think how do you think the groundhog's been doing over the past couple of years?
Okay, so the official, they say that Phil has never been wrong. because what it is the president of the Inner Circle reads one of two scrolls from that Phil supposedly picks out, and he may misinterpret. That's what happened one year when it was really cold. And he said it was going to be an early spring, and whew, it was not. So that's how, you know, that one time. But, it, you know, being in weather, everyone here knows there's words that you can really, there's no real, you can sleaze your way through a forecast. And it's really interesting because six more weeks of winter, what's the definition of winter? There is no true definition. I mean, how cold does it have to be? Is there snow or just cold? How much snow? I mean, it snows in spring. So, you know, that's a little bit. And spring right around the corner. How long is that block? Maybe it's 6 weeks long. So, you know, there's interesting ways of doing it. I will tell you that since they really did that, they most of the time will try to find a shadow because most people are going to be unhappy. My quota spring is 3 months of people walking around unhappy about the weather, asking when spring going to get here, at least in the East Coast.
Joe, just a quick follow-up. Is there a Southern Hemisphere version of Phil?
I do not know if there's a Southern Hemisphere version, but I do know there's several across the country. And, right. And I'm not going to put them on the hook, but, you know, they all are kind of copycats. And, you know, the different organizations do different things, and some of them can get a little competitive about it. And yes, there was one, I'm not going to say, you'll have to look it up yourself. I heard that one time one of the organizations They had to weaken and Bernie the groundhog, if you've ever seen the movie.
Uh-oh. Well, I didn't know there was so much drama on this.
And Joe, what I'm confused about, the part that is always very unclear to me, is how does Phil reveal whether he's seen his shadow or not? I mean, you've been closer to him than most, unless we have found the one talking groundhog, how exactly do they determine, how does he let his handlers know whether he's seen his shadow or not? Like, how is that determined? What is the process that's going on that lets them figure out, yes, he's seen a shadow or not? How does he indicate that? I've never been clear on that.
Yeah, the way they do it is they knock three times on his stump to wake him up. They bring him out, the handler will bring him out and let him look around, and they put him on the stump, and communication of groundhog ease. And I think it's mostly visual, and you'll see the president of the inner circle is the only one who can speak for groundhog ease at the time, according to the legend. And they look at each other and have this like mental conversation. And he tells them which of two scrolls he sees, and they're pre-written statements. So that's the way they decide it.
That's hysterical, because I know so many times, you know, we're weather folks. We'll see the satellite imagery. You're like, how could he possibly have seen his shadow? It's a low gray overcast. What's going on up there? Murgo, what in the world is going on up there? How long have they been drinking? You know, those are the things I always wonder about. Back to Matt's point, like, how in the world is there any communication with Phil? I mean, does this groundhog have any idea what's coming every year, or, you know, a day or two beforehand, or is he pretty much subterranean the whole time until it's go time?
Well, he is got the life. He has his own little house and his wife there sitting in his burrow at the Punxsutawney Library. And that groundhog, he's got a feast every day. He's treated so well. So he has a visual, but he's never out in the elements like we are through the winter. So, but he's just trying to keep the crowd pleased. And you know, I've given up, because, I mean, I have seen it clear as clear could be, and him not see a shadow. And I've seen it cloudy as cloudy could be, and he sees his shadow. So I think there's some talk. Either he's getting, you know, I do know he has told me he is a viewer. So, you know, because I'm his local area, maybe he's getting some hints of the long term. But, you know, it is a very interesting scenario. So, and you know, and it was Ohio that really threatened him the one year. There was an attorney in Ohio who actually put a legal suit against Phil for getting it wrong. And it was all over the place. I went on the air and I was just, and you know, why are you picking on Phil? Your own Buckeye Chuck said the same thing. And, you know, and so it was kind of interesting. And then he eventually dropped the charges.
I'm going to give the other guys another chance or two before we close up. But real quick, do you remember the coldest one that you covered? Does that stick in your head, or were there just a lot of cold ones?
There are several cold ones. I know once or twice it was below zero for me. But recently, speaking of a little bit of a climate change, recently I've dealt with more in the 2000s, and I like it when it's warm because the ground can get very muddy there. I do know the one year that Dave Price came in from the early show, CBS early show. He came and covered with me. It was pretty cold and he didn't handle it well. And I remember people called up our station, and I know other stations said, why'd you let him up there when he was drunk? And he didn't have a thing to drink. He just couldn't handle the cold. And your speech gets slurred when you're that cold. So there have been some. I do know one year, and when my daughter came one year, my family's only come once. I will just tell you that. So that's it was memorable, but they won't, you know, they're like, yeah, been there, done that. But when she was there, it was so cold. And I remember because she had a cast up to the top of her leg. She broke her leg skiing that year. And they had her on the side of the stage and she was all in a blanket and freezing. And I'm trying to think, but I think it may have been 2013 for that one. So, you know, that's a good 10 years ago since a really, really cold one has been there.
And Joe, do you have any tips for people who are considering going to see this in person? If they're thinking about it, how far ahead do you have to plan? Could somebody listening to this podcast now just at the spur of the moment, you know, night before, to say, hey, I'm going to go and show up? Or should there be a little bit more planning involved? What tips do you have for folks who want to go see this thing in person?
How adventurous are you? That's what you have to ask yourself. If you're just willing to show up, somehow just drive in at 3-4 in the morning, you drive to downtown Punxsutawney, there'll be plenty of signs of where you can park, and they'll bring you up in a bus, and you can do it spur of the moment. And so you can do it last second. And I know people who will, when they look at the forecast and say, oh, I can handle that. The thing I could say is standing outside for a long period of time, even when it's a mild groundhog day, can test a lot of people. It can be cold. So you just have to dress appropriately. There have been many times that people do it spur of the moment, and then they're like, and then they go someplace else and watch it from inside because they couldn't handle it. So that's the biggest thing, is you have to dress pretty warm for it, because once you're up there for a while. And when you leave, it's interesting. Once Phil's done with his prediction, if it's cold, I mean, it's just like the lights are on in the kitchen and all the cockroaches just, phew, they're gone. They go away very fast. But that's my biggest thing. And anyone could come. And, you know, you don't have to plan ahead of time. You just have to get to downtown Punxsutawney. Just realize there's a lot of traffic and that you're going to be riding a bus, and dress appropriately. For me, since I'm doing all those TV stations, once I'm in place, it's 5+ hours till I can even, I don't drink a lot of liquids that day, let me just tell you, because there's no break whatsoever. And the, you know, I can never get to the back.
Hey, Joe, you know, you said people could just show up, right? But I'm wondering, are there like VIP experiences that are sold for people for Groundhog Day that are for purchase?
Yeah, not too long ago, they started doing some VIP, and they have a big warming tent in the back and some hors d'oeuvres and everything like that. That's a relatively recent thing, but they just built a whole groundhog center there on the top of Gobbler's Knob. So there's a big building, and so they're really promoting the tourism. And so a lot of those are people who are willing to pay extra money. Yes, they get a few extra perks. They can get a little bit closer to the inner circle, because the average people, what it is there's a big area. They have family sections. They have the rowdy sections. And then there's a fence, and only media and some VIPs can get in that.
So, Joe, before we let you go, are there any food trucks or people selling coffee at 3:30 or 4 in the morning? Or is it just bands starting to show up? I mean, what are the things are keeping people entertained until daybreak?
The inner circle does plan out and has a schedule of events that they do. And you know, being someone who, this is my 22nd in a row, I know everything. I could tell you the order of the songs of their fireworks show. I remember one year they did switch the songs. I'm like, oh, wait, it's different. And then they went back. But they plan out everything. They have a whole schedule. They have the Phillettes, which is a local dance group that just dances on the stage. They have all their games out there, the newlywed game, when they call people up to do the YMCA. So they have it all out there. And yes, there are some vendors, and also some of the family of the inner circle has coffee. They have a lot of first aid, because you're talking a lot of cold weather. Things happen. You bring 30,000 people up in the middle of nowhere, so things happen. There's a lot of logistics that go out there, and people like Inner Circle. So when I leave my house on Wednesday this year, the first, to me, it's okay, how many hours do I have till I'm done? It's a countdown, and it's the same to them. You don't sleep. You're just going pretty hard.
How long a drive is it from Altoona to Punxsutawney?
Just over an hour. So you can get stuck behind coal trucks or wood trucks. You know, it's not the widest road. Punxsutawney is not the easiest place to get to.
No, I know that. I've never gone. That is on my bucket list, but it's probably going to be a while before I can make it up there. Joe, thanks so much for joining us and giving us some of these inside stories. And I did want to give you a quick chance to elaborate. You're getting out of the biz, as it were. So tell us a little bit about that, to your comfort level, as it were.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I am getting out of regular broadcast meteorology. I've been doing it, as you know, first TV station. It was in 1995. And before then, I worked for AccuWeather. So I've been in operational forecasting and broadcast forecasting for a long period of time. And I just thought it, I just had the feeling that it was just time. And the hours, a lot of people don't realize, are really tough on television meteorologists. So you should really thank the people who do it, because there's you know, a lot of weekends, a lot of early mornings or late nights. I mean, I've been working odd hours since I was 19 years old, and I like doing computers and things, and I love the atmospheric sciences, and I think climate and climate change is a very important thing, and I'm going to be going into more of that and more analysis and helping businesses to survive in an ever-changing world. So I do think that is something that is worth a challenge. While I'm still young enough, it's worth a challenge and to step out and do something new.
Always good to keep the brain active, new challenges. In fact, that's what we're all doing here with the podcast and the whole bit. So, Joe, good luck with the new endeavors. I know the people in Central Pennsylvania will miss you. Keep us posted on how the new things go. But for right now, we'll let you go. Take care. And we'll be back, everybody, with a few closing thoughts on the Across the Sky podcast. And welcome back to some closing thoughts on the Across the Sky podcast. Kirsten Lang had some other commitments, so she's taken off. But we've got Joe, as well as Matt and myself, to talk about what are these great stories that Joe Murgo has from all those years covering Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney firsthand. I just love to hear him talk about how things have changed there over the years, and really what the movie did for that community. Because I'd always known about the groundhog situation there, being a Penn Stater in the 80s and early 90s. And as undergrads, there were a handful of people that would go out there, but I wasn't one of them. I'm like, it's cold. I don't want to go stand out in the woods in the middle of the night in the cold. But it wasn't this epic thing that you see today. And I think the movie that really, really had a lot to do that, had a lot to do with that.
It's crazy to me that it's been 30 years since that movie came out. But I mean, it is such a great movie. There's a reason it made our top 10 weather movies list. If you haven't listened to that podcast episode, go check it out and see where we ranked Groundhog Day. But I mean, it is a great movie. And I think, you know, I could see how it built on the popularity of it, because the movie was so good and people, you know, and it was the central thing in that movie, though there are discussed in the episode other plot lines going on, but that's the main focus, is Punxsutawney Phil and his prediction. And I could see how people are like, that movie was great. Now I need to see this in person. What is it really like? And so I could see how it grew from there. But it's just crazy to me that it's been 30 years since that movie came out. I'll make you feel
yeah. Old. And you know what? And I should have said this at the top. My hockey team name is the Bill Murrays.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. In fact, my jersey, I have my hockey sock over there. But yeah, it is the Bill Murrays. I should have said it at the top. Poor podcaster me. But anyway, I didn't know that many people came. Like he said, 30,000 people on the weekends would come. You know, that's incredible. And you have to imagine, you know, like you said, Sean, there's people, this is a bucket list event, and Joe is there every year. Like, I don't think he takes it for granted, you know, but especially like you said, you know, he's wrapping up his broadcast career. We'll see what happens next with him, but I'm sure it's such a special moment for him. And you know, for kind of like one day, you know, from at least Joe's perspective, like he's at the center of the universe. And it's really cool, you know, for him to be in that kind of position. So I just like enjoyed hearing him speak about, you know, being right there on stage. He said I'm guessing it was 2021. He said during COVID 2021 Groundhog Day, they were pretty much just waiting for him. Like, you know, from his perspective, that's got to be pretty neat to know that he's so ingrained in the culture of Groundhog Day as well. You know, that's what I took away from it.
No, I agree. To know that for one moment every year, everything is really focused on this town and what you're going to say about it, and how you're responsible for getting a message out literally to millions and millions of people, generally in the United States, but in some cases internationally. And, you know, media demands are what they are nowadays. Y'all know this. There's so many TV stations, so many outlets, so much curiosity about this. I mean, scroll through Twitter, as soon as a groundhog pops up, boom, you know what happened. But it is, it's the way he has seen it change is really, really amazing. And I'm glad to call him a friend. We have known each other since the late 80s, and he's just a great guy. And I wish him all the best in his new endeavors.
And as far as personal thoughts on Groundhog Day, I mean, some people ask me, like, do you get mad that everybody's like paying attention to the groundhog instead of you? And not really for me. I think most people get that it's like, there's no scientific basis for this. This is really just fun. I think when I talk to people, it seems like most people aren't they're not really believing what the groundhog says and obviously exactly how he makes the prediction. But I like the whole event because it brings focus on weather. For one day, weather is the talk. Whether there's a big storm going on or not somewhere in the country, everybody is talking about the weather. And is it going to warm up? Is there going to be 6 more weeks of winter? And it gives us an opportunity to actually dive into the science and try and get an idea of what it is going to be like the next couple of weeks. What is it going to be like the next couple months? So it gives meteorologists a platform to talk about the science and talk about meteorology, gets everybody talking about the weather, which I love the weather. I love people talking about the weather. So I'm okay with Phil. I don't hold a grudge against him.
Yeah, I mean, it used to frustrate me a little bit, but now I've gotten older. I understand that it's a party. It's a reason for celebration. As we said at the outset, and that Joe reiterated, it's halfway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. It's literally halfway through winter. So it's a time for celebration coming out of this time of the year where it's at its darkest, right? We start getting daylight a lot more. You know, we're picking up a couple of minutes of daylight every day once we get past the first week of February. So it is cause for celebration. I don't stress so much anymore about, is it 6 more weeks? Is it not? It's February. February's happened. But it's a nice time to reflect, celebrate. We're coming out of some of the coldest weather of the year. Martucci, one more word from you, and then we're going to close the shop up, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate Joe's time. And, Groundhog Day is coming up in just a couple of days here, and I'm sure we'll have some coverage of it as well on our website, so you can check that out. And we're just really happy to have Joe here. I just want to say one more thing, too. Like Matt said, you know, a lot of these things are fun, but they're teachable weather moments, similar to polar vortex and bombogenesis and all those kind of things, you know.
Atmospheric river.
Right, atmospheric, thank you, Sean, atmospheric river. They're real things. Groundhog Day, you know, a little different, but the point is, it's bringing awareness about the weather, and I think overall that's a good thing, whether it's Groundhog Day, which, you know, is a little shaky, or something highly scientific like bombogenesis or an atmospheric river. If you guys are enjoying it and we can teach you something about it, you're better prepared, or at least know more about weather as a result, I'm in.
Totally. I'm absolutely in. And I am very much looking forward to getting past the halfway mark of winter. With that, we are going to close up the shop for this week. Thank you so much for joining us on the Across the Sky podcast. I'm meteorologist Sean Sublett from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And for Matt Hollander in Chicago, Joe Martucci in Atlantic City, and Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, have a great week, and we will talk to you next time.